The Senate will come to order. It's not on. The Senate will come to order. And the clerk will call the roll. Is it
on? Berry. Berry. Bristow. Bristow.
What happened to Senator Bristow?
Colby. Cornelius. Drain. Florence. Gasly. Grimm. Lamson. Micatini. Ruckel. Scott. Scott. Waymire. Waymire.
Senator Waymire.
I have traveled, I am here.
Wells.
Here.
Williams. President Elkins.
President Elkins is here. The 16 members of the Senate are here. The colors will be posted by Senator W.W. Bristow and Senator Thomas Cornelius. The song playing while the colors are being posted is Hail Columbia, which was the national anthem at the time that Oregon became a state. Please notice that we have on display at the front of the chamber the U.S. flag with 33 stars to represent Oregon's statehood. Oregon, the Valentine State, became a member of the Union on February 14, 1859. However, it was not until July of that year that Oregon's star, the 33rd, was officially added to the American flag. Signs of wear at stress points indicated that this flag of the period was flown for some time. It was obtained by Norma Paulus, our former Secretary of State, who has donated it to the state of Oregon. Thank you, Senator Bristow and Senator Cornelius, for posting our colors. The commemorative prayer invocation will be presented by Senator John W. Grimm. This commemorative prayer was from the 1909 50th Oregon birthday celebration. Senator John W. Grimm.
Let us pray. God of all grace, mercy, truth, and love, we gather here today with grateful hearts to mingle together in celebration of the 50th anniversary of the admission of the Commonwealth of our beloved Oregon into the great sisterhood of states, the United States of America. And in the opening of these ceremonies, we desire, first of all, to render to Thee our grateful thanks that we live and that we live where we live. We thank Thee for the memory that many of Thy servants gathered here today still hold in mind the stirring events of 50 years ago today. We thank Thee that so many of the men and so many of the women of those stirring times have, in the order of Thy gentle providence, lived on to hear and to see so full a realization of the hopes and inspirations of that noble generation upon whose labors the active generation of this day are now entered. And now, Lord, we would here today, on this appropriate occasion, which calls us together, make mention of our gratitude to Thee for the blessings of home and country, which come to the generation here assembled through the labors and toils of men and women who have finished their course and gone to their rest. O God, most merciful, the memory of these men and of these women whose thus labored and thus toiled is as ointment most precious. And Lord, we would pray that the alabaster flask of this precious ointment of the memory of the men and women of the past might be broken here today in the midst of this people gathered here in the Capitol building of our Commonwealth. And Lord, we would pray that the odor going out from that ointment of memory of the past and hopes of the future may rest upon all this people, and that every heart may be moved with gratitude and be inspired with resolution for the good and the right. And we most earnestly beseech Thee that this odor of the past and of all the good that has come down to us from the toils and labors of the past may rest upon all our state officers, upon the governor and those associated with him in the administration of the laws of our Commonwealth, and that through them our laws may be administered in the fear of God. We are told by inspiration, O most merciful Father, we are told by inspiration that the hearts of princes in Thy hands, and we would therefore pray earnestly that these Thy servants, the members of the Senate and of the House of Representatives, now assembled for active duty, may be moved by the sweet odors coming from the memory of the days we celebrate, February 14, 1859. And we would pray that the Senate chamber and the hall of the House of Representatives might be filled with the odors now coming up through the memory of that day, and that every member of the entire legislative body may be moved by a sense of duty, both to the past and to the present as well. And now at the close, we would commend to Thy fatherly grace, Thy fatherly blessing and benediction, this, the present generation, the children and grandchildren of the men and women yet living, most of whom have counted 80 years, and many of them 80 years. God of love, keep the men and women of this generation in Thy fear, so that they may do even more and better work than their predecessors, so that our whole country, the United States of America, may continue to bless the world, and to bless, as she now does, all nations of the earth, and that she may continue to be one undivided country until the voice of the Son of God shall be heard descending in the clouds. We ask all in His name, who taught us to say, when we pray, Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be Thy name. Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done, in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For Thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Now, I will ask Senator Cornelius to lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Senator Grimm, for your prayer. Thank you, Senator Cornelius, for your pledge. Courtesies of the Senate. Recognize Senator Wells.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today we have the honor of having the present-day County Commissioner Bill Hansel, who is dressed in authentic buckskin attire clear down to the moccasins. And so, Bill, if you'd stand up and can you shake a leg and show them those moccasins? Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Courtesy of Senator, extended to you, Bill. Recognize Senator Haas, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. My privilege today to recognize and ask that courtesies be provided to a couple of native Oregonians who are 10 years old, Isabel and Justina, who like sports and reading. Thank you.
Isabel and Justina, congratulations for what you like, and more importantly, thank you for being here. We'd like to extend the courtesy to send it to you. Are there further courtesies? Representative Senator, recognize Senator Gailey.
Gasly. Mr. President, it's Gasly. Mr. President, back in the 1850s, we didn't have exchange student programs like we do today in 2009. We did have coolies, I believe, from China that they brought in, but we have the distinct honor of having 18 of the 147 students from the Tokyo International University of America here with us. And they're up in the gallery behind me, and I would like you to extend courtesies to them. This is an American satellite school of Tokyo International University, and they are going to be spending 7 weeks here in the United States to learn about Oregon and living here and university life at Willamette University. Their mentor or peer coach is Joy Young, and my intern Aaron is also here. Would you extend courtesies to them?
Thank you, Senator Gasly, for correcting me. I'd like to extend the courtesy of Senate to the students from the Tokyo International School, all of whom are here. It's a special day in Oregon, and they're here at a very special time. So I appreciate your being here. The Senate extends a special invitation as well as appreciation for your appearance here today. Thank you. Recognize Senator Grimm.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to ask you to extend courtesies to my wife, Linda, who just journeyed in from the gold fields to be with us today. And also, I have a number of family, grandchildren, and friends in the balcony, and I would ask that you extend courtesies to all of these good people today. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Grimm and Linda and all the children and grandchildren. I'd like to extend the courtesies of the Senate to you on this day, Oregon's birthday. Recognize Senator Doug Whitsitt.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like for you to extend courtesy to the Senate to my wife today on our anniversary. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Whitsitt. Would you like to tell us the name of your wife, please? I know the name, but I just thought you'd like to tell the world.
Yes, absolutely. Mr. President, my wife's name is Gail Doris Hildreth Whitsett.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gail, and Doug, congratulations, and I'd like to extend the courtesy of Senate to you. Recognize Senator Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to extend courtesies and actually acknowledge into the record the fact that today not only is Oregon's birthday, it's also Arizona's birthday, but more important than both of those is today is my wife's birthday. And she was going to be here, Mr. President, and I had talked to you about that last week. Unfortunately, she and our 8-year-old are both sick, so they're at home. And so we will not be able to sing happy birthday to her, and that's unfortunate. But I did want to acknowledge that I honor this state, which is why I'm here, but I may be slightly in trouble for being here.
Thank you. And Senator Cruz, does your wife have a name?
Yes, she does, Mr. President.
I would like her name, please.
Her name is Beth Ann Ruth Cruz.
Please tell Beth Ann that we extend the courtesy of Senator to her on Oregon's birthday, Arizona's birthday, and everyone else's birthday. Thank you. Recognize Senator Waymire.
Thank you, Mr. President. Two courtesies. One is to my good buddy Jess Day, who is on the South Aisle. I would like courtesies extended to him. And secondly, sitting next to me is the distinguished Honorable Senator Starr, who has served the great state of Oregon over a career spanning two centuries.
Thank you. Jess? Jess, welcome to the Senate. We'd like to send a courtesy to you and to the Stars. Senator Charles Starr, thank you very much. It's an honor to have you come back to us on this very special day for Oregon. Thank you very much. Extend the courtesy of the Senate to you. Recognize Senator McKinney. I don't know what to do with that. Is that McKinney?
My right honorable president, you are quite correct.
Thank you.
Is the correct pronunciation. Mr. President, I would like to extend two courtesies. First, to my lady, who I do know her name, Peggy Lynn. At least today I do. And I also recognize to my future congressman, who obviously caught the night train, the future night train from Washington, D.C., who will be elected in 150 years to office, who is here from my district.
Thank you. Peggy Lynn, we'd like to welcome you here, and thank you for coming, and I'd like to extend a courtesy to Senator. I'm going to do something in a minute with that person you just named, so I'm going to wait. Senator Lamison, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like the Senate to extend courtesies to Dale Buck over in the side aisle. Hails from Tillamook County and is here today celebrating Oregon's agriculture history with the Oregon Century Farm Program. They're downstairs, and I hope everybody goes down and says hi to him.
Thank you. I'd like to extend the courtesies to the Senate to each and every one of you. Are there any more courtesies? All right. Here we go. Senator Wells.
Thank you, Mr. President. My wife's name is Alice, and she's on the side aisle also. And okay. I would also like to introduce my daughter, Rhonda, and her son, Jordan. They're sitting in the side aisle. And we also have Steve and Donna Rathalty. And I always mispronounce that name. And their daughter, Stacy, is our intern, and they're down here celebrating. And I just would ask the Senate to extend courtesy for them. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay. To all the friends, as well as the wife of Senator Wells, we'd like to extend the courtesy of the Senate to each and every one of you. Thank you for coming here today. It's an honor and a privilege to have you. Recognize Senator Larry George, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ed requests his courtesies be extended to many of my family members who are up in the gallery, both my sisters, I think their spouses, several nephews, and my niece, my grandmother, Alain McGann, and my mother, Kathy George. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, and excuse me, my wife, Jessica Johnson George.
Jessica, to Jessica and all the family of Senator Larry George, we're very happy you could be with us today. We'd like to extend the official courtesies of the State Senate today to you on this ceremonial session. Recognize Senator Starr, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like courtesies extended to my children, Brooke and Brett. They're sitting with me at my desk. My wife's Rebecca, but she's not joining us today. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay. It's Brooke and Brad. Was that Brett? Okay. Thank you. We'd like to extend the courtesies of Senate to you. It's an honor to have you, all the stars here today. Thank you. All right. Are there any more courtesies? On the floor today, we have Congressman Lafayette Grover. Who will soon become Congressman Lansing Stout. Let me explain. Obviously, the good Congressman, Kurt Schrader, has joined us after flying all night, I believe, from Washington, D.C. He is on the floor right here, sitting beside Senator Martha Schrader, his wife. And what's interesting is, back in 1858, as you know, we talked about this in the opening day, when Oregon made a move for statehood in the U.S. Senate back in May that year of 1858, said yes to Oregon. But all kinds of problems were going on in the U.S. House of Representatives at times. It was very much a partisan fight, not wanting Oregon to be a state of four. So they recessed, and they came back. They came back, as you know, in December, actually, and it wasn't until February that they actually were able to make the, get it done and establish the vote. What Oregonians, apparently, as from our research did, is before the Senate said yes to Oregon in May of 58, they held an election, and they sent, told two individuals. Lafayette Grover was to be the congressman up until March of 1859, when the new Congress went into effect. So that person was supposed to be the member of Congress, at least pending, and go back there. And his name was Lafayette Grover, and he was a an attorney from Salem, and he served whatever might be left of the 35th Congress once Oregon became a state on February 14th. So, in effect, technically speaking, Congressman Kurt Schrader is Lafayette Grover at this particular time. However, on March 3rd, he is the Congressman Lansing Stout, because Lansing Stout was then when Oregon, the Congress came into session, and that time Oregon was a state, so he became the first congressman from the state of Oregon. And I love this. He was a Portland attorney, and he served a couple years in Congress, and then he came back to Oregon to serve in the legislature. So most people don't do that. They serve here, and they go on. So the good Congressman Kurt Schrader, who is one of our own, as you know, for so many years in the House and the Senate, he, in effect, can make his decision today that he is the Congressman Lafayette Grover or the Congressman Lansing Stout. So, Congressman Schrader, we're very pleased you could come here today and be part of our history. So I'd like to extend the official courtesies of the Senate to you. One last little bit. John R. Bride was from Yamhill County, was first member of the Oregon State Senate to ever be elected to Congress in 1862. All right, a little bit of history. I need to introduce myself. I am the Luther Elkins, and I am president of the Oregon State Senate. And I'm a farmer, and I'm a merchant from Lebanon County. My story is not like many of my fellow Oregonians. I was born in Cornville, Maine. I was orphaned in Indiana at the age of 13. I lost my parents. I've experienced the ebb and flow of my own fortunes, having worked at the back-breaking labor of crushing rock, the trade of making wagons and carriages, and as a wholesaler of tobacco in Ohio. Like many of my fellow citizens, I came to this state by way of the five-month journey over the Oregon Trail back in 1852, seeking an opportunity in this new and growing land. I'm honored to serve as the first president of the Oregon State Senate, having served in the Oregon Territorial Legislature in 1853 and 1854, and as a delegate from my county to the Constitutional Convention here in Salem in 1857. I would like to introduce you this morning to my wife, Philotheratia, right here. I think I butchered that name. Philothea Williams Elkins, who married me in 1830. Together we have 8 children. Whoa. James, Joseph, Louisa, Elizabeth, William, Clara, Julia, Charles. That's a lot of children. Enough about me. We now go on. Are there any more courtesies? I would now ask for messages from the United States Congress, and I recognize Senator Frederick Waymire.
Mr. President, the 35th Congress of the United States of America, at the second session, began and held in the city of Washington on Monday, the 6th day of December, 1858, an act for admission of Oregon into the Union, whereas the people of Oregon have framed, ratified, and adopted a constitution of state government which is Republican in form and in conformity with the United States Constitution, have applied for admission into the Union on equal footing with the other states. Therefore, be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that Oregon be and she is hereby received into the Union on an equal footing with the other states in all respects whatever, with the following boundaries. In order that the boundaries of the state may be known and established, it is hereby ordained and declared that the state of Oregon shall be bounded as follows, to wit, beginning 1 Marine League at sea due west from the point where the 42nd parallel of the north latitude intersects the same, hence northerly at the same distance from the line of the coast lying west and opposite the state, including all islands within jurisdiction of the United States, to a point due west and opposite of the middle of the north ship channel of the Columbia River, hence easterly to and up the middle channel of said river, and where it is divided by islands, up the middle of the widest channel, therefore, to a point near Fort Walla Walla, where the 46th parallel of the north latitude crosses said river, hence east on said parallel to the middle of the channel of Shoshones or Snake River, hence up the middle of the main channel of said river, to the north of the Owyhee River, hence due south to the parallel of latitude 42 degrees north, hence west along said parallel to the place beginning, including jurisdiction in civil and criminal cases upon the Columbia River and Snake River, concurrently with states and territories of which those rivers form a boundary in common with this state.
Thank you, Senator Frederick Waymire. Reading and adoption of commemorative resolution. I recognize Senator Charles Drain.
Thank you, President Elkins. And before I read the resolution to our colleagues, I would point out, reference a couple of letters from our fellow citizens that came over the Oregon Trail in 1854 here to Marion County, speaking of the bears and the Indians and the strawberries. And one of the first original published maps of our new state, Mr. President, just a few months after statehood, which, yes, Senator, it has the lost county of Umpqua, 19 counties in Oregon, here as we have been established, and both of these documents will be available in my office after our ceremony today, if anybody would like to take a look at them from the original statehood. President Elkins. Whereas Oregon is rich in Native American culture and tradition that long preceded Oregon's admission to the Union and the arrival of trappers and settlers from the United States and other countries, and whereas Meriwether Lewis and William Clark, at the instruction of President Thomas Jefferson, explored the area as part of their survey of lands in the Louisiana Purchase and spent the winter of 1805-1806 on the Oregon coast near what is now known as Astoria, and whereas in 1811 John Jacob Astor established Fort Astor as the outpost of the Pacific Fur Company and the first permanent Caucasian settlement in Oregon, and whereas a vote held on May 2, 1843 at Champuy to establish a provisional government of Oregon passed 52-50, and whereas Oregon was added as an official territory to the United States of America in 1848, ending the provisional government, and whereas Oregon was admitted to the Union on February 14, 1859 as the 33rd state, and whereas Oregon was founded on the industries of fur trade, agriculture, fishing, and timber production, and whereas since its admittance to the Union, Oregon has attracted and provided inspiration to generations of dreamers and innovators whose creative ideas have included pioneering laws such as the initiative and referendum, an 8-hour workday, women's suffrage, direct popular election of United States senators, the bottle bill, and public ownership of ocean beaches. And whereas creative Oregonians have also launched great business and technological innovations, from the oscilloscope to the world's fastest computer chip to the waffle sole. And whereas Oregonians prize their glorious natural environment and lead the way towards sustainable practices, both economic and environmental. And whereas Oregonians have always looked to the future, even as they commemorate Oregon's past. And whereas February 14, 2009 marks Oregon's sesquicentennial, now, therefore, be it resolved by the Senate of the State of Oregon that we, the members of the Senate of the 75th Legislative Assembly on this 150th anniversary of Oregon's admittance to the Union, encourage Oregonians to actively participate in the events and what it means to Oregonians by appreciating Oregon's past, celebrating Oregon's present, and imagining Oregon's future. Thank you, President Elkins.
Thank you, Senator Green. Recognize Senator Alfred Metcalf Berry.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, for the opportunity to time travel with you today. I would like everyone with us to time travel back to 1968, or forward, depending on where you're starting from, to this article. What do you suppose residents of Oregon were complaining about when Congress admitted the state to the Union on Valentine Day, 1859? If you guessed everything, you wouldn't be far off. But specifically, they were yelling about property tax relief and the need for a broader revenue structure to finance better state and local government services. Now, as Oregon observes its then 109th birthday, today 150th birthday, these old complaints sound very familiar. Actually, residents had approved statehood almost a year before Congress formally signed Oregon on as the 33rd state of the Union. Oregon's statehood got bogged down in two sessions of the Congress because of the slavery question that would later divide the North and South in a civil war. Governor John Whitaker became the first state governor March 3, 1859, 12 days before news reached Salem by Pony Express that Oregon was admitted to the Union. To resolve many legal and fiscal questions facing Oregon as a state, Governor Whitaker called the first extra session of the Legislative Assembly on May 16th to June 4th. Now, only 20 days were allowed for the extra session, and 5 days maximum for another one in July. In his May 16th message to the legislature, Governor Whitaker devoted considerable copy to chewing out legislators for not taking care of much of the pressing business at its regular session in September of 1858. Now, in 1968, that might have sounded familiar to Governor Tom McCall. Thank you very much, Mr. President, for this opportunity to share some history with everyone today.
Thank you, Senator Alfred Metcalf Berry. Senator John S. Picatinny, please.
My right honorable, Mr. President, I would like to address the issue of quorum troubles, if you'll allow me.
Please do so.
Governor Whitaker admitted that the regular session faced a slight problem, but it really could not be labeled as a do-nothing legislature. You see, neither chamber could assemble a quorum, so they adjourned and traveled back across the state to their homes on September 14th. There were other problems. The Capitol on Williamson Avenue had been destroyed in 1856 by fire. State agencies were housed in various public and private buildings in Salem. The Holman Building at Ferry and Commercial was used as the Capitol. The Treasurer and Secretary of State maintained offices in the Statesman Building, whose editor, Sahal Bush, was the state printer. Governor Whitaker told the legislature in May special session that the state faced a deficit. Yes, the state faced a deficit of $10,000. Governor Whitaker further said that it wasn't proper for a state to owe money. The legislature responded quickly with House Bill 21, an increase to state revenue by increasing the property tax levy by 2 mills. That's not 2 sawmills, 2 mills, which is 0.2 cents on the dollar. It had been 1.75 mills till that date. Certain business, mining, and liquor taxes, of course, were also in effect. Sin taxes. Judging by State Treasurer J.D. Boone's annual report dated March 16, 1859, the increase in revenue millage wasn't going to do much to improve the state coffers. The report on that date showed that the state had received exactly, Mr. President, exactly $22,375.74 in revenue during the previous year. And we, of course, had spent everything except $1,404.71, which we had in savings. That was Oregon's cash balance as it took an awesome role as a new state in the Union.
Thank, Thank you, Senator John S. McKinney. Luther Elkins was not real articulate. Recognize Senator Joseph Ruckel, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just, before I give you the little history, I want to tell you a little bit about Senator Ruckel, because I knew nothing about him until I Googled him this morning. He left the East in 1845. He was the first civilian to cross the isthmus. That's hard to say. In the late 1850s, he joined with Harrison Olmsted to establish the first rail service in Oregon. And what was said about him is he was not a wealthy man, but possessed some means, good business ability, and abundance of energy and perseverance. Sounds like an Oregonian to me. So let me tell you about the Legislative Assembly. Before going home, legislators approved a bill establishing their salaries at $3 per diem and $3 for every 20 miles traveled to and from sessions. That's quite a bundle of money. Sergeant in arms, assistant clerks, enrolling clerks, and doorkeepers received the same per diem. Since there were no laws in force to protect waste of state properties, legislators passed an emergency act to cover this problem because it seems individuals were taking stone and iron from the Capitol building fire ruins for their own personal use. The legislature also established an improved judicial system to protect the constitutional rights of residents, including those accused of crimes. Judicial reforms were needed too, judging by a statesman's story in its May 16, 1859 edition from its Roseburg correspondent, James Pyle. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Joseph Ruckel. Recognize Senator Darius Wells.
Thank you, Mr. President. After Oregon became a state, we became very sophisticated, and I need to report to you the results of an unprovoked attack on May 7th of 1859 upon Roseburg Justice of the Peace Eli B. Robinson. The justice had been shot by an Irish vagabond named McPherson. And in the old days, McPherson would have been lynched on the spot by angry citizens. But there was interference by a Judge Deedy, who demanded that the rope be removed from McPherson's neck. Unfortunately, the Justice of the Peace died that evening, and McPherson was taken by citizens from the courtroom where he was having a preliminary hearing and hung under the bridge at Roseburg. The correspondent writing that day said, "If there was ever a case where a man needed hanging for shooting a good man down like a dog, it was this case." And then he added, "Amen." And the postscript, "Peace and quiet reign in our village, and we are as law-abiding as though there had been no bloodshed and violence in our midst." Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you for that, Senator Darius Wells. We're now on a further discussion. Recognize Senator Florence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm here to stand and give a little history as to the lost county of Oregon. Many do not know that we actually lost a county. It's the Umpqua County. Umpqua County was established in 1851 and had a lifespan of 11 years. It's worth noting that the county was named by the Native American tribes from that area, and that when one was asked as to what it meant, one of the Native Americans rubbed his belly and said, qua, full belly, which was referred to as the lushness of the area because it had so much to an abundance for all to come. In fact, there was an article that was in 1851 from a local newspaper called The Spectator that commented that only in 3 months' time, the valley that was scarcely had any trace of humanity, of course they were referring to a white civilization, had grown full of Yankee enterprise. It became a county in 1952, January 24th, when Benton County was divided and Umpqua was formed. 4 days later, Lane County was actually established, and within the next 2 years, Coos and Douglas counties were established. To the demise of the Umpqua County, it turned out, as we've heard in so many times this today, that finances became the problem. The issue here was that they, too, were losing money. After the downfall of the economics, the gold rush being over, many individuals were relying on services to be provided by the county, but it turned out in 1855, the county was down to a surplus of $5. In 1859, it had plunged to $125 in debt. And at that point, there was so little money, no capital improvements or other buildings of the government could be taken care of, and road construction was neglected. Sounds familiar. But at this point, the county was decided that it was going to be absorbed into three different counties. And so Umpqua, the lost county, became parts of Lane, Coos, and Douglas counties. That occurred on October 16, 1862. Even though I first thought that was a special session, it turns out that the legislature used to meet in the fall until the farmers realized that they needed to stay home, take care of their crops, and that they moved the time for the meeting of the legislature into the winter months. Mr. President, when I do look at the map that's on the desk of our members, I do have one question. This is a question that would go to the senior senator from Southern Oregon. When I look at the map, Jackson County at one time actually had coastal front property. In fact, its borders went from the Pacific all the way to the Cascades. But now, today, we know that the senator from Southern Oregon, or Southwest Oregon, now has that portion. It was told to me that maybe that happened over a poker game. Is it true, Senator, that you lost part of your county because of a poker game?
Thank you, Senator. Auburn B. Florence. Recognize Senator Elias F. Colby.
Thank you, President Elkin. I would like to give you some history of not all was peaceful in our new statehood. We did have to deal with crime and justice, Mr. President. Cattle rustling was not the only occupation that occurred in our criminal system. Mr. President, the first penitentiary was located in Portland, Oregon in 1851 to handle the crime that was running rampant in our new state. It moved to Salem in 1866. I think they want to give it back. And if you think, Mr. President, that men only were the ones who were convicted and sent to the penitentiary, the facts are, Mr. President, poor Charity Lamb, she became the first woman convicted of murder. For the 1954 axe slaying of her husband. Colleagues, remember your wife's name.
Very, very good.
She served several years of hard labor at the Portland City Jail. And her task, if you walked by, you could frequently see her working and toiling on the washboards because, you see, Mr. President, she was doing the warden's family washing, their laundry. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Elias Colby. Recognize Senator Thomas Cornelius.
Thank you, President Elkins. You're doing a fine job of time travel here today. Colleagues and those that are looking on from the galleries, we're lucky to live in Oregon because history is never very far away from the present moment. Matter of fact, we can touch it all around us. As an evidence of that, I offer this book, which I picked up in a local bookstore here in Salem. This book is entitled The Organic Laws of Oregon, the organic and other general laws of Oregon, the National Constitution, and the other public acts of the states of the United States, 1845 to 1864. It was compiled and annotated by Judge Deedy, the same, in fact, judge who prevented the lynching in Roseburg, and it was printed by Henry Pittock, who was at that point in time the state printer. We know him from his many enterprises, but mostly because of the survival of the Pittock Mansion. M.P. Deedy, as a matter of fact, was the person most responsible for the theft of the Oregon Capitol from the city of Portland and the relocation of that capital to Salem, Oregon. If you'd like to read about that, go online and look at Stealing Salem, and you'll find some very interesting history there. But, Mr. President, I'd like to refer to a printed material, if I may. One of the most important things that was done in the state legislature in the early years was an act that was passed on October 21st, 1864. It was enacted by the state legislature that the governor be, and it was hereby authorized by that act, to require the appointment of a suitable commissioner whose duty it shall be to immediately upon adjournment of the session of the Legislative Assembly to collect in order and method a code of all the general laws of Oregon and enforce under the appropriate heads and titles with margin notes and references and also a syllabus of each section at the beginning of each chapter or title as the case may be and a well-digested alphabetical index of the whole. And in the compilation of such laws, such commissioner shall omit all phrases, terms, names, and expressions inconsistent with the Constitution of this state, and shall substitute, therefore, such phrases, terms, names, expressions as are authorized and provided by our Constitution. The collection will contain the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Compact, and Ordinance of 1787, the Constitution of the United States, the Index of the Constitution, Acts of Congress for Naturalization of Aliens, Acts of Congress for Authorization of General Laws, and the Organic Law and the Admission Act, the Treaty between Great Britain and the United States, the Act of August 14, 1848 for organizing the Territory of Oregon, and the Act of Congress September 27, 1850 creating the Office of Surveyor General, the Constitution of the State of Oregon, and the Act of Congress admitting the state to the Union. Colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, the original documents that I refer to are on display in the lobby. They're in the rotunda today, the handwritten copies. And the book that this act authorizes was distributed to every member of the legislature at the time. All of the offices of the state of Oregon got a copy. 10 copies were deposited in the Oregon State Library. 3,000 copies were printed in whole. I hold one of them in my hand today. Mr. President, if I could refer to something that I think is incredibly important. After statehood, the most important things that the legislature did was to organize the body and organize the state in terms of its government. It took action to do that in a series of laws that were enacted right after statehood, and I mean June 2nd, 1859. What they did was describe the office of the governor and limited his powers and authorities and duties. The office of the Secretary of State described and limited the authors, the powers that were delegated to the Secretary, likewise of the Treasurer. But also, almost as important as describing those issues was to design the Great Seal of the State of Oregon. And I would like to share with you the few words that most typified and symbolized Oregon at the time of statehood. That is the Great Seal that you'll see in the rotunda on the floor under one of the most beautiful rotundas and most beautiful cupolas in the nation. But take a look at the seal, and I quote, that the description of the seal of the state of Oregon shall be as an escutcheon supported by 33 stars and divided by an ordinary with the inscription, the Union. In chief, mountains, an elk with branching antlers, a wagon, the Pacific Ocean, on which a British man of war departing, and an American steamer arriving. The second, quartering with a sheaf, a plow, and a pickaxe. The crest, the American Eagle. The legend, the state of Oregon. The secretary shall be required to procure the seal described in the preceding section and draw his warrant on the treasurer therefore. Mr. President, that seal is alive and well. It resides in the Capitol and in the hearts of all Oregonians. And Mr. President, thank you for the opportunity of sharing this little historic moment. And all Oregon celebrates today's birthday, the 150th birthday of the state. And thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Thomas Cornelius. I recognize Senator John Adams Williams. That would be Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to share with you first a few facts about Oregon history. The first free public school opened in Portland, Oregon in 1851, and the teacher was named John T. Outhouse. Amid much opposition, Oregon's first public high school opened in Portland in 1869 and had an enrollment of 45 students. By 1880, that enrollment had reached only 140. The Chemehua Indian School opened here in Salem in 1886 with 207 students. Its forerunner had been in Forest Grove. And in 1860, Oregon had 75 churches. The Riverview Cemetery was established in 1882 in Portland and was open to all races and creeds. And one of the Oregon pioneers who is buried in the Riverview Cemetery in Portland was Abigail Scott Dunaway. Abigail traveled to Oregon with her family on the Oregon Trail in 1852. She was a teacher who overcame incredible personal setbacks, including poor health, money problems, and opposition from her brother, Harvey W. Scott, who was the editor of a local newspaper named the Portland Oregonian. Her cause was women should have the right to vote in this state. She persisted despite incredible opposition from her brother, from her brother's newspaper, despite the consistent failure of women's suffrage referendum on state ballots, and finally, by a vote of the people, was able to see her efforts come to fruition in 1912 when Oregon became the seventh state in the Union to pass a women's suffrage amendment. Abigail Scott Dunaway in 1912 was 79 years old, and so on behalf of the 12 women now serving today in this body, I wanted to share with you her incredible story. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator John Adams Williams. Recognize Senator Lamison, please. Jeremiah Lamison.
Thank you, President Elkins. Colleagues, the more things change, the more they stay the same. With respect to transportation, in the 1890s, bicyclists were credited with starting the crusade for better roads. A horse-drawn streetcar system forms in Portland in 1871. In 1893, the East Side Railway Company begins electric streetcar service from Portland to Oregon City. The trip takes an hour. And Mr. President, with respect to the environment, Portland takes ownership of a privately collected group of no longer wanted pet bears, parakeets, and the like to form a public zoo in 1887, the forerunner of the Oregon Zoo. One of the first timber conservation efforts begins in 1891 when Congress grants the President the power to establish forest reserves. And last, Mr. President, an investigation by the Oregonian in 1887 concludes that the Columbia River is being fished out, labeling the situation an emergency.
Thank you, Senator Jeremiah Lamison. Recognize Senator S. R. Scott.
Thank you, President Elkins. Today, colleagues, boys will be boys. Not only will boys be boys, but in 1860, white men between the ages of 20 and 29 outnumbered women more than 2 to 1. Families were very busy.
The Chinese population at that time had a numbering of 3,300. In 1870, fewer of them were women. In 1860, Oregon boasted of 390 manufacturers employing 968 men and 10 little women. By 1900, 3,088 employed 15,120 men, 1,821 women, and 295 children. In 1880, Oregon Railway and Navigation Company advertises for laborers at $1.75 a day. This started the change in the makeup of Oregon's peoples. In 1860, Oregon by now has 5,657 farms, but by 1900, due to the agrarian nature of the people of this great state, and men who had dreams and dared to dream big, and men who wanted to see Oregon grow and become one of the finest in the nation in terms of how we provided food for this great nation, we had 35,837 farms. President Elkins, thank you today for the good work of the great men of Oregon.
Thank you, Senator S.R. Scott. Recognize Senator James Gasly, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm supposed to be representing Senator Gasly, and he was a man. And as you can see, I'm not really cross-dressing. I am a woman, but there were no women back when the Senate started way back in the 1850s. So I do apologize, but I am much more comfortable in this garb. I want to share with you a little bit about the Oregon life from 1850 to 1899. In 1850, dried apples sold for 75 cents a pound, eggs were 50 cents a dozen, and salt was $6 for 100 pounds. In 1889, a good cottage on a 28 by 100-foot lot in southeast Portland sells for $2,600. And a 104-acre farm a mile from Jervis in Marion County sells for $6,000. And it wasn't all work. We did have play. The first state fair is held in 1861, which is now Gladstone. And then the fair moves to Salem the following year. In 1864, Portland's first leading library opens with 1,400 books purchased with $2,500 gathered from door-to-door canvassing. Sounds like what's happening in Southern Oregon. The Pioneer Baseball Club of East Portland forms in 1866, and several Oregon towns soon boasted their own teams. Sunday games, however, are discouraged as immoral. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator James Gasly. Is there any further discussion? Senator Berry, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I would like to share with everyone here a bit of religious diversity about the state of Oregon. Sharing the sesquicentennial with the state of Oregon this year is Congregation Beth Israel in Portland, a Jewish synagogue that has been in existence, Mr. President, in Portland for 150 years. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Alfred Metcalf Berry. Further discussion? Senator Charles Drain, do you wish to close? He does not. The question now before us is the adoption of the Senate commemorative resolution honoring Oregon on her 150th birthday. I will now ask for a unanimous vote on this resolution. Is there any objection? There has been no objection. The resolution has been adopted. My fellow senators, just before we go to announcement in closing of our plenary session, I would now like us all to stand. And the good Senator S.R. Scott Carter to lead us in singing Oregon, My Oregon. Senator Carter, please.
Land of the Empire Builders, land of the Golden West, conquered and held by freedmen fairest and the best. Onward and upward ever, forward and on.
Announcements, I want to especially thank the Oregon Historical Society and the staff of the Secretary of the Senate for and George Carpenter in particular for the research that went into today's presentation. I also want to thank all my fellow senators for coming here today, and I specifically want to note Senator Bonamici, Senator Devlin, Senator Winters, and Senator Ferrioli, and Senator Metzger, Senator Pazansky, Senator Montes Anderson, Senator Morris, Senator Johnson, Senator Boquist, Senator Walker, Senator Carter, Senator Atkinson, Senator Nelson, and Senator Rosenbaum, because, as you know, each played a role of a senator who was here way back in 1859. I also thank my staff, in particular, Sasha. She was able to help me jerry-rig this little costume. She was a theater major back in Oberlin College. You can tell her skills came to work today, and also Robin for doing much of the research. It's the day we commemorate Oregon's 150th birthday. She was the 33rd state to go into the Union, as you know, and she was only the second state in the West to become a state. And I was going to ask the good Senator Waymar which was the first state in the West, and you probably all know which one it was. It, of course, was the great state of California, which was the 31st state, and the 32nd state, if you're interested, was the state of Minnesota. And I'm happy to say that the members of Congress, as you remember, it was a historic vote. 14 members of the Republican Party had to change their vote and go against their party, or Oregon would not have become a state. The Democratic Party was in control, but they were divided because of the Civil War, and the Republican Party was not divided. They were solid, but it was with a certain number of Democrats and 14 members of the Republican Party that went up the hill, and I think the vote was 114 to 103 on that day of February 12th, way back in 1859, and that was how Oregon got the vote that needed for the United States Congress after almost 8 months of fighting. And then, as you know, 2 days later, President Buchanan signed it, and we became a state. And so with all that on the record, this has been a great day. I'm very proud of the Senate. It's really a pleasure to be up here presiding, and I want to thank all the members of the gallery that came here today to witness this commemorative session. Some have come and gone, but we appreciate it. Throughout the day, there's all kinds of activities going on in your capital. This is your capital. This is Oregon's capital, Oregon, my Oregon's capital. And so we are grateful, each member of the Senate, for your coming here today, and we hope you have a wonderful day. And you honor us by your presence. So thank you very much. With that, is there any further announcements? Do any of my fellow members of the Senate wish to make any announcements? Any further courtesies? You've done good. You've done good. Thank you very much. If there's no further discussion, the Senator's commemorative session is officially adjourned. Excuse me. Senator Grimm, yes. Did you wish to speak, Senator Grimm? They have one light on. That was... You do not wish to speak, Senator Metzger. Your light was on. You did not. Thank you. With that, what... Senator Morris, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Senator Morris, yes. Senator Morris,
well,
thank you.
President Elkin, thank you for the courtesies extended to me to make an announcement. As you know, I traveled with all of you across the continent. I left in 1847, arriving here in that fall of 47. And I've had a lifelong interest in mining. And what I wanted to announce to you today, Mr. President, is a gold strike. Mr. President, there's gold in our hills. There's wealth in our land. We've talked about a budget problem today, and as the great Senator Wells from Pendleton has reminded us constantly, there is wealth in the land, there's wealth in our resources. Mr. President, let's mine. Let's mine. Let's mine. But Mr. President, I can't tell you where this gold strike is. It's a secret.
Thank you, Senator. We could sure use some of that gold. Thank you. Is there any further announcements? If not, this commemorative session is officially adjourned.